welcome to Souls on Fire with your host, Joe Trainer. Joe is a husband and father of three, and for 29 years was an award-winning and very successful college football coach. Today, he is the director of athletics for Pope John Paul II High School. He is a leader, a man of character, and filled with the joy of the Lord. Joe was running for God's heart and became a soul on fire. Listen in every Monday as Joe interviews other sports figures and businessmen and women who bring their faith into the marketplace. And now, here's Joe Trainer.
Hello and welcome again to another edition of Souls on Fire. For all you Eagles fans out there that are mourning after a bad loss against the Giants, hopefully we can bring some positive vibes here in the next hour. And I have a guest that I couldn't be more excited about. Mark Houck is the founder and president of a national organization called the King's Men. We'll be talking about that much throughout the show. He is one of the most in-demand Catholic speakers in the United States. He's a proud husband, a father, and he's a passionate Catholic. I've had a chance to listen to this guy speak. He's a phenomenal speaker. He's dialed in. And tonight's topic is something that is really, really interested me when we started talking about what some of the topics might be. This just kind of jumped out at me, and we're really going to spend most of the time tonight talking about authentic masculinity. And we live in a culture that for those of us that are fathers or uncles to young males, the challenges that these young people have, the males have, it's incredible because there's so many mixed messages out there with masculinity. But before we talk about that, I'm going to give a shout out to Mark here. Mark, it's great to have you here today.
Joe, you sound like you're on the football field, brother. You're dialed in. We're dialed in.
I don't know if I'm dialed in, but Mark is a local legend. He was a two-sport all-Catholic, great athlete at LaSalle College High School. And then from there, he went to Catholic University of America. So, Mark, before we get into the topic, why don't you just give our audience a feel for, your journey from Catholic really to the King's Men up until this point in time right now.
Sure. Well, thanks again for having me. I know we are a couple weeks delayed, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
I've been looking forward to it for a while, so... That's right. So Catholic University, Washington, D.C., the only Catholic institution founded by the U.S. bishops, was not a very Catholic institution when I was there.
Interesting.
In name it was. Fulton Sheen taught there for many years. There's a lot of great things that happened there. However, when I went there, I wasn't a soul on fire, if we can borrow that title.
Sure.
I never left the church. But I was living a double life, and I think some of your listeners will know that. I was there on Sunday, but during the week I wasn't doing what I should be doing. I fell into the usual party scene in college. The chastity was not at the highest level it should be.
Sure.
And so from there it just was kind of affirmed and I guess ratified through the people I was with. They weren't all living for the Lord either.
Had a very similar experience.
Right?
We talked about that a couple shows ago.
Yet I was going to daily mass.
Sure.
It was kind of weird. Again, I was living
the dichotomy.
This double, Our Lady's shrine down there really was great to me. And I think I felt her presence, even though I kind of, again, compartmentalized. But from there, I didn't really move into any, thirst or hunger for the Lord till I was about 25, to about 3 years after college.
Okay.
And it was through the Charismatic Renewal, which Kathleen, of course, has been a part of for many years. My mom was going to a charismatic prayer group in Warminster, PA.
Okay.
And I went there, and I fell in love with what I witnessed. I didn't know what it was I was witnessing.
Sure.
But I fell in love with, the joy and just the stories of the people. And they were older people. I was the youngest guy there, probably by about 20 years,
sure.
maybe 30. And it just kind of was the beginning for me. And so I never left the church, but that's when I really started to form, as we always say, and the Protestants would say, that personal relationship with Christ, even though I was cradle Catholic. So from there, I started to listen and pray more. And I started to volunteer my time with youth ministry. Being a young guy, not married, around 25, I started to invest in it. And that's where I started to see that dichotomy of me. I was, you know, if I'm going to be working with young people, I better be walking the walk and talking the talk at the same time. And I wasn't. So it really forced me to take a look at myself and then start to address those deeper wounds and then address the stuff that I was not really paying attention to in college, which was, you know, the habitual sins against purity and all those things. And so I started doing that, and I met some other people. And Molly Kelly, who's a wonderful international speaker, pro-life pioneer, chastity speaker, moved across the street from me. Literally,
no such thing as a coincidence.
Right. And so I'm like 27 years of age, and then I'm hearing her story, and she's starting to mentor me just as like a mom. My mom is a widow. She's a widow. And then I started to date Protestant women. Go figure, right? And they were very devout, and they would say to me, "Well, defend that biblically." You know, they'd say, "I said, what are you talking about? Defend what?" You know,
sure.
So I would express my Catholic faith, but they didn't know, you know, where that was coming from, and they wanted to see the biblical roots in it. So I said, "All right, well, let me learn my faith." 22 years of private Catholic education, Joe. I didn't really know what it meant to be Catholic. Here I am, a 27, 26 year old man. Unfortunately.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. You know, and I don't mean to interrupt you. That's you right. Talk about, you know, the stigma, right? I think, and I'm in the same boat you are. Had a, you know, spent the first part of my life in total disharmony. You know, I'm preaching. I say my goals are one thing, and then I'm acting in a totally different context. But the stigma, you know, you talked about the Protestant or the Christian denominations when they talk about a personal relationship with Christ.
Right.
Why is it that scare, like, and I came up in the same Catholic church you did, you know, the very traditional, very communal, you know, you had the Sunday obligation, and then you had the daily opportunity to attend Mass. But it was almost like, I think almost to a fault, the communal component. I don't know. I look back on that when, like, for so many years, you know, I didn't have a personal relationship with Christ, and I look back and I'm not blaming anybody, but I don't know if that type of individual relationship was promoted. Well, you know, I certainly am trying to encourage my own kids with that, and you know, and the importance of that. And I don't know if it was just overshadowed with the communal component of the Sunday obligation or what. But for the longest time, and to this day, I know a bunch of you know, practicing Catholics that when they hear the personal, to your point, it is very Protestant or Baptist, but the personal relationship with Christ, it has a stigma to it. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think for us as cradle Catholics, we really don't have this zeal that our Protestant brethren have a lot. We take it for granted. We know a lot. We know more than we realize. You know, hearing so much scripture every 3 years. You know, if you go to daily mass, you hear the whole Bible practically in 3 years. However, it's in us, but we don't, like, we're not encouraged to evangelize. And so I think for me, as a young Catholic as you, you know, you had your parents, and it was your parents' faith, and it's just, okay, this is what we do. And if that's not translated in the home, I have wonderful parents, but my parents weren't evangelists. They weren't even apologists. You know, they loved the Lord. They loved the faith. But we weren't necessarily being taught.
Groomed.
You know, how to go out and express and share the love of Christ that is in you. And so, again, it was almost compartmentalized by virtue that my parents, and again, different generation, they grew up at the Baltimore Catechism.
Sure.
They didn't really have to defend it. Everyone knew it.
Yeah.
But we came in this time, you and me, this pre-millennial, you know, Generation X, you know, 70s and 80s kids who were, you know, a fruit of this sexual revolution where now people were questioning everything.
Sure.
And so when we're coming of age, you know, we're not really having this encouragement, nor are we really being catechized very well.
No doubt.
I went to the Gwen of Mercy, and I had the Mercy nuns, Frankly, I didn't really know what it meant to be a Catholic. I had the Christian Brothers, as you mentioned, LaSalle. And unfortunately, although they treated me like a man and helped me enter into manhood well, I really didn't get a lot of catechism, morality. It was confusing. It was almost the liberal progressive agenda that infiltrated the mercy nuns, and you know, they got out of the habit. They weren't wearing the habit anymore. They were in the habit when my early days in grade school, but then they weren't out of it. They were out of it at the end of it. And then the Christian Brothers, you know, they weren't necessarily, you know, teaching, you know, all the things that I would preach today. So to answer your question, long way of getting around to it and end around here, is that I don't believe we knew what we were leaving and what we were doing.
Sure.
So that it was easy to leave if we left, or it was easy to be coerced or convinced by a Protestant that we were not doing what we should be doing. And so then we've had these Catholics that are falling away Catholics saying, well, this isn't really the true church, right? Because I don't know my Bible, right? I don't know anything about the Bible. In reality, we do. But so in that regard, I think a lot of Catholics left, and peers of mine are not living for the Lord, not having that personal relationship, because they didn't even know what it was. They didn't even know that that was an invitation.
Sure.
Right? It was just kind of like, this is what we do on Sunday.
Let me ask you this. So, you know, it's come up here as the church, the umbrella of the church. Sometimes I feel like more is dividing us than uniting us, right? So you have, you know, what is Catholic? You know, I know in the traditional sense, I think it means universal. But what is, it just seems like in the last two to three years, more is dividing us than uniting us. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get into that. But in terms of being catechized properly, like my analogy is this, Mark. You know, when you look at, you know, the Baltimore Catechism, you know, it's like when you throw the rock in the water, the first circle is very pronounced.
Right.
And then the next circle is less pronounced. And then and then it becomes so faint that it's almost undiscernible. Right. You know, and I think that's kind of where we are, you know. And then, you know, you've heard a lot of conservative Catholic clergy that are, you know, talking about the need to be catechized properly, you know, again, like, you know, as a church under the umbrella of the Catholic Church,
right.
Is there anything that you see going to be done at that international level in terms of, hey, this? Because I know people, quite frankly, that we both claim to be Catholic, but we're coming from such different vantage points.
Right.
Is there a reconciliation that happens? Is there a break? Is there something? What do you see happening, you know, in the next 3 to 5 years, and I'm not getting political at all, but
yeah, sure.
In the next 3 to 5 years, just in terms of, do you see a schism happening, or do you?
So we have this, that question came up with Father Dermot, right? I think that came up when he came to the Men of Faith. So what we have, I see in the church, is we have a traditional Catholics who want to get back to, you know, the pre-Vatican II extraordinary form mass. And so there's a sect of Catholics that are very devout, very devoted, and very reverent that want all that the church has to offer pre-Vatican II, right? Now, there's Catholics like me who embrace that, but also like Vatican II.
Sure.
Right? So the Novus Ordo, the new mass, as they call it, is something I enjoy and I appreciate. So I think what we have is they call them rad trads, but, you know, radical traditionalists, which, right, I say radical, that's not mean like Muslim, you know, like radical Islamist. It just means radical, getting back to the roots in a good way, but they can be a little judgmental, right? And then there's guys like us who were both and Catholic. So in our Catholic faith, it's a both and church. It's not an either or
sure.
church.
Well,
so it's both and. It's sacred scripture and sacred tradition. Well, it's extraordinary form and Novus Ordo. It's not either or. And both are bringing grace to the people. And so we have that group. And then you have this group where the knowns, you know, they call them. They don't even claim to be anything, but they're ex-Catholics, fallen away Catholics. And so there's more that are there than there are in the other two groups that I just mentioned.
Yeah, no doubt.
So we have this group that wants to totally, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater, which is like anything post-Vatican II, forget it. You can't do that, right?
No.
I mean, that's not the answer. They're not, again, we don't get rid of them either. But I think what we need to do is we need to, as you say, focus on what unites us, which is the sacramental life of the church, and then going and evangelizing the knowns, as they're called, you know, and reaching out to those that have fallen away and inviting them in back to get to know what actually they left. Because sure. They really don't even know what left. They don't know the Eucharist. Well, they don't know that the Eucharist is the body and blood, soul, and divinity of Christ. They don't even, they think it's the same thing when they go to their evangelical church. That it's, in fact, they think it's even deeper and more meaningful because the message from their pastor is more meaningful to them than what we're getting in our churches. Sure. So we need better preaching. And if we don't get better preaching and we don't get better teaching from the magisterium, we will have that schism. I don't know if that's coming now, but if we're not getting better teaching, there's going to be a split. And the side that wants the authentic teaching, that'll be one side. And the side that's going to go on the liberal progressive side of things is going to go their direction. So, I don't think it's here yet, but I think it could be coming.
Gotcha. Great insight, by the way. So talking about, you know, masculinity, I mean, you're a father, you have 7 children.
Right.
What's the breakdown, boys to girls, for you?
4 and 3.
4 boys?
4 girls.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, the balance of power shifted dramatically with that
I'm blessed among women, but cursed at least 5 times.
Trust me, I can tell you, it'll get more demanding as they get older. You know, but we talk about, you know, I spent time with you in prayer at a couple prayer groups, and I know I listened to you, you know, some of your talks, and, you know, one of your areas of expertise is something you focus a lot on with your public speaking and your ministry is authentic masculinity. Just for the viewing audience out there, the listening audience, just kind of define that operationally for us.
Sure. So what we have in the church right now is a crisis in masculinity, which has been going on for quite some time. It's really a result of a failure to properly form men. And that comes in the seminary. That comes in our Catholic education. That's in our domestic churches, our homes. So a failure to properly form men. So what authentic masculinity is really about is addressing kind of that core problem, right? Rite of passage from boys to men, offering that to men so that they can do it properly. Fathers can instruct their sons and their daughters as head of the household, right? So when we talk about authentic masculinity, we're talking about what is our role as men. Now, we're all fathers, whether we're biological fathers or spiritual fathers.
Sure.
We're all fathers. We all have that in our heart. And so we're always initiating and mentoring. And so when it comes to our roles as men, whether we find ourselves as a father, CEO, director of athletics, or evangelist, whatever, we're teaching men how to be better leaders, protectors, and providers. The church often talks about St. Joseph in the role of protector and provider. That's often common. Where they don't really go, because there's a feminized church today. We can say that.
Sure.
On this radio station. And I love women. I love women. As authentic feminists, I love them, right? But there's a feminized church, a feminization in the culture, and in the church primarily, that this idea of leadership with men, no, we don't want to poo-poo that. But as last I checked, St. Joseph was the leader of the Holy Family.
Yep.
Even though his son was God and his wife was the mother of God, he was the leader. And so when we talk about authentic masculinity, we got to talk about leadership, protectorship, and providership.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, okay? You know, I have a 20-year-old son, 18-year-old son, beautiful 16-year-old daughter, Kira, who goes to the Lansdale Catholic. How do you, and I'm a little ahead of you in the
sure.
in the curve with some of the ages, but, you know, the transition from boyhood to manhood, you know, the mistakes that you make that are
sure.
much needed, right? How do you, the challenge, I think, and this really goes with both sexes, but I think more with sons than daughters. You know, when you become a father, you're like, oh man, I just pray to God he doesn't make the same mistakes I did, you know, and you know, there by the grace of God go I was able to survive. I'm like, how do you navigate through things that are going to be very teachable moments, hiccups and mistakes that he makes that are going to be teachable moments that can have a profound impact on him, yet kind of maybe guide him from some of the things that you don't
shepherd him.
Yeah, whether it's you know, the sins of the flesh, or you know, experimentation, or whatever you know,
mm-hmm.
Partly you know, the need to, you know, not individualize your path, but kind of like, you know, craft your own story? You know what I mean? How do you do that?
Yeah, that's a loaded question, and there's a lot. There's a lot there, and you know, the impure curiosities that the world gives our children. You know, some of that stuff cannot be avoided. But as you said, it's a teachable moment. I think when it comes to the domestic church, and that's our home, right? We have the ability to control what comes, the content that comes into our home, especially as they come of age. I think as a child, as a boy comes to about 11, 12 years of age, there needs to be this time when the father starts to pull the child away from the mom a little bit. And this is a healthy thing. Again, mom has to nurture them, obviously, in the early years. And it's good for them in that way. But the boy needs to be initiated by the father, the dad. And so dad needs to start to pull him into a man's world. And that might mean exposing him to some things, not negative things, but that may also mean to be exposing him to things that dad is exposed to. And then those conversations begin. But I think the key for any father, whether he missed the opportunity to properly initiate, he must know that he's always a father. And he can always share wisdom with his sons, even as they come of age. And I think as your boys get older, there's this opportunity where we can learn and we can talk about, like, okay, well, what was your experience like? Okay, you went down this wrong path, but what did you learn from it? Right? And so now you're talking to him like a man.
Yep.
You're not talking to him like a boy anymore. So I think we have 22-year-old, 18-year-old boys, as you do, you talk to him like a man, right? Okay, well, what did that teach you? You know, okay, let's say you've engaged in a relationship outside of marriage. What did you learn from it? You know, so there's a teachable thing there whereby we can say, okay, you know, I don't shame you, but at the same time, I need to encourage you and mentor you, and also be a teacher. You're not a hypocrite if you say don't do, you know, something that I did, because you're trying to help them. You know, may not make the same mistakes as you said.
Is
right?
Transparency? So, do you believe in transparency? Like, we have these healthy conversations, my wife and I. And,
sure.
You know, do you reveal some of the ugly things, the things that you know that you've done in your past? You know, what's your stance on that as an expert?
So as a parent, I've written a brochure on this with Molly Kelly. So when it comes to vulnerability and transparency, it can be very helpful to a teenager that's coming of age, especially as they get to their end of their teenage years, because they put us in a box as parent almost to say, like, oh, this, you never did this, or you don't know what it's like.
Sure.
And reality is they have no clue what we know because we've never told them.
Sure.
And if we did, we'd scandalize them. So I think when your son I think to get to some of the question that you asked me before in light of this new question is the experience is the most important thing, that we tap into not only your experience as dad, as father, and as
son,
man, yeah, who walked in your
yeah,
shoes
you were a son once
30
yeah.
years ago, right? Yeah. So I know what's like to be you, right? Because I've been there. So what we want to do is we want to leverage that wisdom with our son. So he may come to this. So I would say, to answer your question, let him ask the question. You don't initiate the vulnerability, the transparency, till you know he's ready for it. Because what happens is he may not be ready for it. That might be too much for him.
Sure.
However, let's say he comes to you with a broken heart, or he comes to you with some sort of brokenness, whereby he needs some hope, he needs some encouragement. Well, we don't have to give them the details of everything. You say, you know what, son, I've been exactly where you are, and I can tell you what I learned from it. There's a wonderful movie, Old Yeller. We saw it kids, right? It's powerful moments in the movie, which I didn't appreciate until I watched with my kids. And I'll give you some nuggets from this. So we watched the movie, and all we remember is really that Old Yeller dies. But this kid, Travis, goes through this experience where his dad goes off to, you know, do a cattle run for 5 months post-Civil War because they need money. He's in Texas. And Travis is the son who has to be there for the family. Mm. But he's like a 15-year-old kid. So there's this rabies going around, and you know, with these animals and stuff. But before the dad leaves, he says, "Dad, I want a horse." And he says, "Okay, son, you act like a man. I'll bring you a man's horse." In other words, he's initiating him, inviting him into manhood. But he's leaving him, and he's giving him some roles. So when it comes to vulnerability and transparency, we need to almost like allow our kids to fail, right? We need to give them that opportunity. sometimes spiritual maturation has to come with that. So we don't want to necessarily shelter our boys to the point where they don't, you know, experience that. However, we just don't want to throw them to the wolves either.
No doubt.
In this case, Travis is thrown to the wolves because he doesn't have a father there. And so a man like John Wayne comes around the family, and he tells him about this hydrophobia going around. He says, son, this is what you need to do. If you see this, shoot the animal. If you see an animal attack something or you, shoot it right away. Because if you get bit, you know, you're going to have a problem. And he looks at the boy, and he says to him, have I scared you, son? And the boy says, well, no. Well, maybe a little. And he says, but I think I can handle it. And then he looks at him. This is a powerful moment. He says, good. That's the way a man talks, son. And I think, man, this is the way a father should talk to his son, especially as our boys reveal certain things to
sure.
us. You say, I'm really proud of you. You're showing a lot of courage here, a lot of fortitude in what you're dealing with. And so you affirm them. Priests need to do this in the confessional.
Absolutely.
So then at the end of the movie, we all remember old Yeller being shot. So the dad finally comes back and he brings the horse and the mom tells him about what happened. And so he doesn't really go there too much. He doesn't really know how to access that. So he goes and finds Travis and they're finishing up burying old Yeller. And it's a powerful scene. I invite any man to watch this again. And he comes to the boy and he doesn't apologize. Dad doesn't have to apologize for anything. But he comes to him and he says, your mom told me. And he says, feel sad. And he says, I know you're not too thrilled about this horse right now. And I brought you the horse. And he says, I don't know what to do. You know, like he was so attached to this dog.
Sure.
And he says, son, well, you just go on being a man. And he said, and I think you'll find, and you replace the bad things in your life with the good things in your life, with some good things in your life, some new things. And he's like, it's worked for me, and I think it'll work for you. But you just go on being a man until that happens. And I thought, man, that's what we needed. There's the vulnerability.
Absolutely.
Like, he didn't have to tell him all the mistakes he made, but he kind of gave him insight into
sure.
how he navigated certain things. So I think you let your kids dictate. If your kid's getting really emotional and he needs to connect, maybe you share a little bit more. But I think you really don't have to go into your sinfulness as much as they really don't need to hear that as much as they need to know that you understand.
Sure.
Right? And so I think the empathy is really key. And I think you affirm them and you build them up more than you, like, you know, stoop to their level.
Absolutely.
But I think on some level you got to be a little vulnerable and you got to be able to weep with them and you got to be able to be, you know, share some weakness.
That's
lead with their weakness.
Great insight that I'm definitely going to use with my own sons. You know, we talk about the culture, right? So it's I think you have a point. You're about to. You know, your oldest is, you know, you're about to enter the teenage years and kind of, you know, the separating from, you know, the transition from mom to dad in terms of
right.
a little less nurturing, maybe. But then the transition from the family, you know, the church, you know, of the family to now, hey, man, that's that outside world.
Right.
You know, you have middle school, then you have high school, and then you have, you know, and then the one thing, you know, I say, you know, when you're in that, I don't know, let's call it that 12 to 15 age where we all think we're more mature than we are, right? Mm-hmm. We all think, you know, and when you're 14, you want to hang around the 17-year-olds because mm-hmm. you think, you know, you have the maturity of a 17-year-old, but you really don't. And all of us men are, you know, crazy slow to begin with. So we're 17 going on 7. But so you have all these exposures, right? So you have pornography and, you know, and then, you know, the messages of manhood, right? You know, it's prowess, it's money, it's wealth, it's you know, just, you know, that a locker room mentality.
Lifestyle. Yeah.
And then, and it's unlike when you and I were growing up where those mediums weren't there, you know, it's daunting, you know, as a father. And then you also, you know, as a father, you know, the old adage, teach a man to fish, you know, give a man a fish, he's got a meal for a day, teach him to fish, he's got a meal for a lifetime. So
right.
at some point, you know, hey, when we're at home on the computer, I can say, hey, we're going to turn we're going to put the controls on so that you can't access any of that. Well, guess what, man? You're going to be 19, 20 in a college dorm room, and you're going to have that stuff at the tips of your
right.
fingers.
Right.
So before we go any further, we do have to take a commercial break, but this is something that I've been, you know, from 2 months ago when you agreed to come on the show, this is something I wanted to talk about. You know, whether, you know, pornography and some of the mixed messaging that we're sending some of our young
sure.
male adults. But
okay.
Mark Houck, founder and president of the Kingsmen, what a great guest he is, and certainly a pipe swinging disciple of Christ. We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back after this short break.
Hello, Father DeLacy here, and I owe a great debt of gratitude to the In His Sign radio ministry. It was this radio ministry that I listened to when I was going from being a lukewarm Catholic to an engaged Catholic, and this ministry really majorly affected the Catholic that I am today. Kathleen McCarthy in particular has an uncanny ability to speak to the heart, and when she speaks to the heart, she speaks with God's love, with His grace, and with His mercy. I can honestly say that I am a better Catholic, a better man of God, and have experienced the healing and joy of the gospel because of the great ministry of Kathleen McCarthy. And so I encourage others to listen to her so that they can experience the beautiful work that God does through her beautiful words.
You're listening to In His Sign Catholic Radio, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. We are blessed to have had this Catholic radio apostolate for almost 40 years now. Thanks be to God for your partnership. Without you, this radio voice would be silenced. We have a monthly Mass offered for you, our loyal family of listeners. It's our way of saying thank you for underpinning our apostolate with your many prayers and financial support. This is your radio ministry, to be a voice for those who have no voice, to evangelize and to catechize for a time such as this. We know the Lord will bless you abundantly. He can never be outdone in generosity. If this ministry has touched your heart, help us to touch other hearts by supporting us with your prayers and financial support. Call us at 610-527-2906 or visit our website at inhissign.com.
Welcome back, folks. I can't believe that that we're at the midpoint of the show already. Again, Mark Houck, co-founder and president of the King's Men, and we're talking about some of the societal messaging that goes on outside the home of the church, and how you navigate those waters, knowing the kids have instantaneous access to whatever they choose with their cell phones and stuff like that. So, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, whether it's sexuality or pornography or any of those things. You know, what are some of the things you can give us insight on with in regard to that as your parent, particularly young males?
Sure. So, I mean, it's a real challenge today for mom and dad to model the behavior that they want to see in their kids, right? What's the old adage? You can't give what you don't have, right? So if you want your kids to have self-mastery, virtue, well, if you're not demonstrating that as a parent or your home is not, you know, supporting that, then it's why do you think your kids are struggling, right? So I'll often challenge men, and we'll talk about delay and gratification, what that looks like. But when we talk about a cell phone and just the instant gratification that we have, you know, the fast food was the start of it, right? But now it's a fast food everything else, or fast food, you know, fast food culture. So everything is fast, and if we don't get it fast, we're annoyed. And so in the home, we must teach them about delaying gratification. And how do you do that? How does one do that? Well, for men, I'll say, look, you know, I'll say start with yourself, right? Can you give up your phone one day a week? I say Sunday's a day of rest. Why don't you do it on Sunday? Now maybe you have to return calls or something, or you got something the next day. But the idleness, the surfing, the mindlessness that we do on it, as men, as fathers, as wives, it's they're watching you. They're watching you, and they're seeing what you're doing. And they're saying, okay, well, it's good enough for them. It's got to be good enough for me. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I think as your kids are coming of age, we need to be more disciplined as parents. Mm. Now, you well, say, so. Well, geez, I wish I would have thought about this. Well, you know, it's never too late to demonstrate, you know, good behavior, sure. right? And start showing and making changes. But as kids are coming of age, nonetheless, you know, you can't be that dad who's smoking and says, you know, don't smoke, but he's puffing away. So they see the hypocrite in you, right? And they see right through you, and they know when you're lying to them. They're really good at that. They can
very
pick up on,
yeah.
Oh yeah, dad, you're not practicing what you preach. You know, you have this coming to Jesus moments a lot of time as parents. You know, as your kids are in the car, maybe you're driving, you hit a car in a parking lot. What do when your kids are in the car? Do you drive away?
Mm.
Or do you leave a note on the car and show them
sure.
what we should do, right? Anyhow, so these things will come up very organically. These will happen, and so the kids will see, and they'll watch, and they're taking notes. It may not be like, you know, copious on paper, but they're taking mental notes, and they're watching how mom and dad treat each other, how they react, the impatience in the home, the prayerfulness in the home. I mean, if we're praying the rosary in the home, we're praying with our children every day, that becomes a bookend to them. That becomes a staple in their life. We're blessing our kids with holy water. They're seeing that this is important, and then mom and dad are attentive to, you know, the promptings of the Holy Spirit. Mass is the most important thing on Sunday before anything else. We talk about the Eagles briefly. You know, it's more important than the Eagles, right? And so if dad is showing them that this is the source of our strength. Okay, the kids pick up on that. Now, look, when they teach a kid, as Proverbs 22:6, I think, says, you know, raise a child up the way he should go. When he's older, he won't stray. So there's truth there, right? That was wisdom, eternal wisdom there. It's God's words to us, right? So are you walking the walk? The only way you can pass on virtue and the ability to delay gratification to our kids is not just during Lent and showing them that, but every day. How's dad delay gratification?
Mm.
You know, does dad blow off on the hand to go off on the, you know, blow up in an instant? You know, or is he a patient man, a reflective man who's thinking, who's taking a walk to blow off some steam? Or is he, you know, blasting the kids whenever they look at him the wrong way? All this stuff adds up to the kid's temperament that is being shaped. Now, he has his own God-given temperament, but he's also learning bad habits or really good at coping skills. And he watches mom and dad. How do they cope? And because we're in this, like, cocoon together, and we're in this house, none of us can leave. You know, they see the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Sure.
So when we're ugly, we apologize. And we teach them that this is
not
how we restore relationships. Where relationships are ruptured, well, this is how dad restores it. He goes to mom and he apologizes. And he goes to the kids and apologizes when he's offended them. And so what they're seeing is this sacramental life of the church, right? Seeing this confession taking place in the home. Dad's the head of the home. He's dispensing grace in the home. He's the bishop of the home. And so he's shepherding the kids, but sometimes the shepherd loses sight of his mission.
Sure.
And the wolves get into the home. That could be the cable TV. That could be the gadgets, too many. But dad needs to lasso all that and say, enough, no more, not on my watch. And so, again, I think that can happen. As long as your kids are in the home, I think that can happen at any age.
Yeah.
Once they're out on their own, they're in their own place, I think at that point we're like Joseph. We're a man in the shadows. We're just praying now for them that everything we gave them, they will benefit from. And then they'll come to us when they've made the mistakes.
No doubt.
And you can be the wise counselor at that point, and you can mentor and father once again, maybe in a redeemed way, the way you didn't as a young father. And now they're coming, man, my dad's really smart.
Sure.
He really learned. Mark Twain, yeah. Mark Twain couldn't believe how much his dad learned from 18 to 21.
Yeah.
He thought his dad was the dumbest man at 18 and 21. He was just so amazed how much he learned in three short years.
So let's get back to topics of sexuality and pornography. So
surely.
You have, you know, I grew up in that generation, you know, 52. We never talked about it. Like, there wasn't really pornography and the mediums that you have today. But, you know, there were certain things that you didn't talk about. And I'll be candid with it. There's certain topics that I struggle with because of a lack of familiarity with my own children. Like,
sure.
I didn't have those you know, hot topic conversations with my father, who was a great man, but he stayed in silence. And you know, you kind of learn, you know, and I certainly appreciate as a dad, hey, if they're not hearing it from you, they're hearing it from other sources. And I get that. But, you know, talk about like issues of sexuality and pornography when you're dealing with someone that's not there yet, you know, cognitively and emotionally ready to have those conversations. But you know, when your kid's at a friend's house or a big brother's house or in a locker room, mm-hmm. or coming from a sports venue, you know that he's going to be the messaging when he leaves the house. You almost have to prep him for. How do you prep somebody for something that you know he's not ready to handle?
Sure. So, yeah, that's not easy, but it definitely, someone who's you're talking to a guy who was addicted to pornography for 16 years myself, took me 7 years to be set free. So, and my dad was dead at 11, so I had no father, I had no father influence in that regard. And yet, like you, I'm 46, you know, I found it. I found the stuff. It finds you, and in some respects, if you're not vigilant, you know, it'll consume you. And so I had no one to really prep me for that. Again, I looked at my peers and my older brothers, and they were into it, so I was into it, so it gave me permission to do it.
Sure.
So I think we need to take all that information that we've downloaded, even though the way they're accessing it today, the impure curiosity and the triggers are very similar. Right.
Yeah, they never change.
Yeah,
right?
The loneliness. Yeah. You know, the peer pressures.
Sure.
You know, the popularity.
False bravado. All of it.
Yeah, all of the popularity, the girls, the emotional stuff with the girls. You know, that they're being, you know, ostracized by other girl groups, and the boys not so much. But the boys also want to fit in too. And so we know all that are triggered. Those are all triggers for something. So if we've given them the tools to cope with issues in life when they're younger, they're not going to resort to that medication if they have other tools in their tool belt, right? So if they can come and talk, or if they can go and pray, or if they can go to confession. Like, I take my kids to confession every month, right? And they're the three oldest are all, what, 9, 8, and now 11. So we're going every month. They see this is what we do.
This is my routine.
Every month. Whether you got mortal sin on your soul or not, we're going, right? We're going. And so they're getting, this is part of life. This is how we are in relationship with Christ. This is how we live. And so they don't know any different, right? Because I control their world. I control everything. I'm like the Oz. I'm like the guy behind the curtain.
Sure.
And that's how, until the world gets it at them, I can still manipulate. So what I'm doing, I'm training them. You know, and I got my yoke around my neck, and I'm putting the yoke around them. And, of course, I'm linked to Christ, right? So Christ is pulling me, and I'm pulling them along with me. So Christ is training me, the weaker man, and I'm training them, the weaker child, right? So they're following me. So I think if they allow them to follow. Now, you say, okay, well, I wasn't walking with the Lord then. Okay, it's not too late to start, right? Hey, we're going to confession. You know, come on, why don't you come along? Ah, Dad, I don't want to. Come on, you'll feel better. You know what I mean? Hey, son, you don't feel so good right now. Why don't you go to confession? The first thing we should do when our kid comes and says, oh, I'm not doing so good. Hey, when was the last time you were in the confession? First thing you ask him, oh, Dad, it's been a long time. Well, let's go there then let's talk. I'll go out and take you out for a beer or something, you know. Or if they're of age, right? Or let's go have a coffee, right? We're going to be indulging in
libation. We'll go to Buckets and Jenkins. They don't need to be of age, right?
I've been there.
Off topic for a second, and this has come up. There's been some common themes with some of my guests, but I definitely, as somebody that's deep in ministry and devout in this pursuit, talk to me about when the opinion of clergy differs from the moral theology that's 2,000 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, you have some clergy, if someone comes out and says, well, this is okay. And then the mixed messaging that
sure.
You know, that takes place there, you know, and then going back to proper, you know, properly being catechized, like, and then the challenge with that is opinion. When opinion differs from moral theology, you know, and that's then ingested as potential truth. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that.
How do you navigate that as a father with your kids?
Yeah.
So first of all, you call it out, right? The kid, you call it out if it's a misplaced compassion on the issue of gender or homosexuality. Like, you call it out right there. You must know your faith. If there's heresy being preached from the pulpit, you call it out. Now, you may not call it out in church like heretic, but after church, you let your kids know, hey, that was heresy. And what's heresy, Dad? Well, that is teaching against the doctrines of the faith, the moral truths of the faith, as you mentioned. So that's what you heard today. Now, is he a bad guy? Is the priest a bad man? No, he's not. He's misguided. He's been misinformed. And so let's pray for him, one. Let's pray for him. But I'm telling you that was wrong. And so who are they going to trust? You or father, who they really don't have a relationship with? I mean, they know father, and you know, but they're going to trust you. Because they built that up over time. And why would you lie to them? If you don't know your faith, then your kids are like, oh, okay, I guess I'll accept that, right? Because, you know, they're more of an expert than my dad is.
Sure.
You know, my kids look at me as the moral authority in their lives,
yep.
Okay? And that I truly am. And by God's grace and God's design, that's what I am. And mom supports that. She's the helpmate. Of course, we know our Pope and the Magisterium are the teaching arm of the Church, you know, together. But however, you know, opinions, we have to clarify that. If the Pope is just doing an interview and he says something that seems a little off base, hey, that's not true Church teaching. That's just the Pope's opinion. Well, I don't understand. Isn't the Pope infallible? No, not when it comes to his opinion.
Sure.
When it comes to teaching, he's preserved from error. When he comes from teaching the faith of morals, he is preserved from error. And no Pope in the history of the Church has ever taught in error when it came to faith and morals. It's just a promise from God, right? It's a grace. So the Pope's entitled to have his opinions. And I think we just have to talk plainly, right? We don't have to be like, well, you know, let's try and understand it. No, you know what? No, let's just say what it is. This is the Church's teaching. And let's not try to understand, because, you know, he's been shaped by his time in Buenos Aires and in dealing with third world country. And that's formed his opinions on these matters way different than in the United States.
Sure.
So we can call a spade kind of a little bit more of a spade here in the U.S. versus, you know, trying to filter through, you know, smelling like the sheep, like he was truly trying to do, and living amongst the poor. So, I mean, I think we have to, like, not necessarily go there and say, well, you know, the Pope has this, he's from South America. You don't go there. You know, go back to the basics.
Sure.
This is the Church's teaching, and this is why.
Definitely. Talk about, you know, sacramental grace, right? There's multiple areas of grace, but, you know, like to the listener out there, well, hey, man, I can just confess my sins in my heart. You know, and then, you know, I'll be candid with you. I don't go to confession nearly as much as I should.
Most Catholics don't.
No, and I feel like, and I mean, I go a couple times a year, but
sure.
I, you know, there's times when things are heavy in my heart, and I know the juice I get, you know, just from leaving the confessional and just being like, oh, man, it's like, as Philip Rivers says, that, you know, nunc cepe, begin again, right? This is my opportunity to begin again, to start over,
right?
You know, and then sometimes even you know, when you're having, you know, you're dialed in with your relationship and with Christ, there's a cumulative effect sometimes without the sacramental grace of confession that just kind of mm-hmm. wears you mm-hmm. down, you know. Talk about that, the need for, you know, the need for those sacramental graces that are afforded us as Catholic males.
Sure. So, I mean, we know there's actual graces and there's sacramental graces. And so everything is grace, you know, like every moment is grace filled. It can be, if we but open ourselves up to it. And so we have sacramental grace in our marriage. And every day we are faithful to our marriage vows. There's sacramental grace there in the conjugal act. There's sacramental grace being poured out there. So we have this in our home. We don't just have to go to church to find it. We have sacramentals in our home to remind us, our rosary, our scapular, our holy water. This is reminders of that grace. It gives us, you know, encouragement towards that grace. And so sacramental grace of the communion and confession and the grace is poured out in confirmation and through our marriage. You know, these are things that we must hold inviolate, right? We must hold them and revere them. And so for a Catholic, if we want to live a life of faith, a heroic life of virtue, we got to make frequent use of communion and confession. We just have to. I mean, it's our lifeline. I mean, it's the source and summit of our faith, the Eucharist, the body and blood of Christ. And so why would we deny ourselves that when we have an opportunity to get it as much as we want? Now, obviously, we need to be discerning of our situation, so never receiving communion, not in a state of grace. That eliminates the grace, right? So, when I made a decision, the time I fell, Joe, to my sin, sexual sin specifically, and that was often, it was a lot, I wanted to make the time I fell to the time that I got the confession as close to zero as possible. Mm. So that meant like, oh, well, I fell on Monday. Well, Father has confession on Saturday. You know what? Why don't I call up the priest and see if I can get an appointment on Tuesday? Right? Because I don't want to walk around.
Sure.
You said you talk about weight, right? I feel, I'm crabbier. I'm not as nice when I'm in mortal sin, right? I don't feel as good. I'm not thinking as clearly.
So true.
Right? And so I want to get that out of my system as quickly as I can, because I want to get back to being loving and charitable and kind, right? So I say to my, and I'll say the same message to my kids, right? You're not feeling good? Let's get the confession. First thing, oh, Dad, I don't think I
need
to go.
Great advice.
Let's just go. Right? Hey, if you don't need to go, you don't need to go, but it's not going to hurt.
No.
It's certainly going to help, right?
And the sacramental grace that accompanies
that. That's
act.
Right. And John Paul was big on going and confessing venial sins. St. John Paul said, do it. Do it often. Don't go when you have to go. Go whenever you have the opportunity to go. So like, let's say I went to confession last week. Well, if there's a priest and he's available and I'm here and I'm going to go again. Why? Because I want to grow in heroic virtue. And that grace of that sacrament and mass is going to help me. It's going to fortify me. It's lifting weights, right?
Absolutely.
It's spiritually lifting weights is what it is. So I want to lift as much as I can.
That's awesome. That's great advice.
Power lift.
We grew up in a time when, when you lost your father at a young age, so that's a tragedy in its own right. But you had a time, and I hate to be one of these old farts that's kind of just saying, oh, back in the day. But you really did. The village was really raising the kids then.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You had coaches, you had male teachers, you had someone else's dad that when you were doing something out of line, I've said a thousand times when my kids were growing up, listen, your kids are welcome here all the time, but I'm going to treat them like they're my own kids.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to kind of have that, just throw that disclaimer out there, because you know what? If something goes south, particularly with males, then I'm going to throw the hammer down if I need to.
Of course.
And that's the greatest compliment you can give me as a father is to treat my own kids like you treat your own son.
No different than your sons, right?
Yeah. And, but I think nowadays the pressure on fathers, not that any phase of parenting is easy, but right, before you get to that 12, 13, it's kind of like, you're not dealing with some of the combatants, mm-hmm. so to speak, mm-hmm. and some of the outside forces. But what do you say to the father who is just really in isolation because you're not getting that mentorship outside the home? And the pressure now that says, oh my gosh, I may be the only source of mentorship. We've always been the primary one and should be the primary one.
Right.
That never changes. But when you're feeling like you don't trust, other potential models out there just because of the way society is, like, what do you say to the father who's kind of navigating waters and there's a sense of loneliness with that?
Yeah, well, he's going to have it if he's not seeking out a brotherhood, a band of brothers, an iron sharpening iron. He needs to pray for those men to come in his life. He needs to be aware and vigilant of where those men might be. If he's not a good father, he needs to find a good father and hang out with that guy, or at least watch him.
Sure.
And so, this is very important. Men are they like to be kind of on their own. It's kind of in our nature to kind of work through our problems a little bit, and so it's kind of counterintuitive for us to seek out other men. It kind of happened naturally with coaches and stuff like that, but when we get out of college and stuff like that, we're kind of on our own. And so there's this even the culture kind of breeds like this machismo with
don't be vulnerable.
Pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. So, but in the Catholic Church, as Christ is modeled, the 12 apostles, it's not that way. He sends them out in pairs. He doesn't send them out alone. They're always, Paul's with Barnabas and Silas and, Timothy. He's preaching with with others, you know. They're not usually running rogue. And so we can't do that. And so if there's a guy out there who's idle and stuff, he's going to be a target for the evil one. A slim pickings, you know. Easy pickings, I should say, for the evil one, because he's going to be taken out. There's no one to strengthen him and fortify him. And so the men's groups and the things, the men of faith group that you're a part of, are wonderful for men, because it strengthens us. It reaffirms what we should know, and maybe what we're trying to live and preach to our kids and practice.
That's awesome. And then as we close up here in the next 5 minutes, when you found, you're the co-founder and president of the Kingsmen.
Right.
So talk about, give our audience a chance to identify what is the organization.
Sure. So the Kingsmen started 16 years ago, and we started with small men's groups, much like your Men of Faith group. And well, we have about 50 of them around the country, and we do that and on a weekly basis. So we have guys plugging in and here in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. So that's the heartbeat of what we do. We have retreats that are offered to men to help stimulate what we're trying to teach in those small men's groups, but do it in a 3-day or 4-day weekend. And that kind of gets guys excited and interested in going deeper. So usually it's kind of the cart before the horse, but sometimes the retreat has to come before the small men's group. You got to give guys reason, and sometimes you get them on a boot camp or something like that, where they can see oh man, you know, I got filled with a lot of information. Now what do I do with it? So we have a whole back end support with our apostolate to our men's groups, but also we're sponsoring retreats all around the country, outdoor experiential retreats, healing retreats for men, father son retreats. I do a lot of lectures around the country. We do a lot of activism. So as men, we're called to take our faith to action. So fighting abortion, right? Traditional marriage, pornography, right? We've been a part of the closing of 22 sexually oriented businesses simply by going out and praying. So these are some of the things that the Kingsmen have done in the last 16 years. We have a radio program as well.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I mean, you know, it's great work. And
was this something that you kind of wrestled? What a great thing. I mean, it's 16 years old. Right,
16 years old, the apostolate. Yeah. Right, yeah.
Now, what? How much was that in the making prior to the?
It was the answer to my problems, and that's how it started. Right, I was seeking other men, and so there was nothing out there. What we had growing up, Joe, was the Knights of Columbus, and
sure,
our dads were part of the council.
No doubt.
Right, but there was nothing else. There was the Promise Keepers movement, which McCartney started,
yeah,
the Colorado,
Bill McCartney,
right?
Yeah.
Bill,
yeah,
McCartney. He started. That was a bunch of ex-Catholics and fallen-away Catholics. But they were the next thing in the early 90s,
yeah,
but nothing really. So when we launched in 04, it was us and That Man Is You, and I didn't even know who That Man Is You, because they were starting the same thing. So we were trying to offer something, because I would go to the council meetings for the Knights, and there was no formation or accountability. So they're great at service and stuff. That's wonderful.
Sure.
I didn't see the formation. I didn't see the accountability. I didn't see the strengthening, the sharpening. So that's why we launched, because it was an answer to something that was missing in my life. Plus, we know from the locker room and the football teams, that was how we thrived.
Yeah.
So why don't we just duplicate,
sure,
that? Except we're no gridiron. We're in an office. We're in our parish, but we're still men bonding like we did in the locker room.
That's
right?
Awesome. And yeah, then the name, the great name. Where did you
okay?
An epiphany,
so I was advised to start with aardvark in the dictionary just to begin to stimulate some thoughts.
Sure.
Made it to C, and I came across Christ, and I said Christ the King, and then I said the kings, all the king's men. Huh, and I'm like Humpty Dumpty. Okay, now how about just the King's Men? And it just kind of stuck, you know. It was it sounded really Protestant too, right? A lot of guys called it evangelical.
Sure.
Evangelical. But it just stuck, and we all could unite under that banner. We're all under Christ's kingship, right? Men and women, but men specifically.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, yeah. That's a great title. It's definitely
it's unifying.
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, you talk about the need for formation with groups, you know, and that's this group that I'm involved in has been enlightening, and you know, the need for affirmation when we are vulnerable, you know, and then we come up with this, it's, you know, showing weakness. That's, it's not, you know, you're taught at a very early age, you know, don't be vulnerable.
Right.
It's not okay to cry. You can't, right, you can't show fear. And then you get to an adult and then you feel like, man, I want to, you know, I feel like crying right
I've
now.
I've been duped.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And yeah, then, you know, what a powerful opportunity for people, you know, in your organization to just say, okay, man. And I learned this in the last probably year, the need for my own boys, my own sons, it's okay to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
It's okay. Yeah. And the need for them to see me paying homage to Christ, you know, and to show some humility, because at the end of the day, that's really, you know, that's the ultimate Christ-like feature. Awesome. Mark, this has been awesome. I look forward to tuning into your radio show. Holy Spirit Radio, what channel is that?
Yeah, so we're a 1570 in the Doylestown, Bucks County, Philadelphia area, and then 1420 in the Chester County, Coatesville area. So that's second and fourth Friday of the month at 11 a.m. is my program, The King's Men.
Awesome. Yeah. And then second and fourth Friday.
Yeah.
And then I'm definitely going to tune in for that, brother.
We got to have you on as a guest.
I'll try to keep him awake. I don't know about that. 11 o'clock, that'll be great. Listen, this has been a great hour.
Again.
Yeah, and it's been awesome, and something that I've really kind of, I feel being pulled to, like, you know, and again, maybe it's because my sons are, you know, hopefully future fathers and husbands, and you know, my legacy at the end of the day is going to be, you know, what type of men they turn out to be, and what type of daughter. Yeah, that's all, you know, my kids, you know, I've been blessed with great young people in my life, and my job now is not to screw them up anymore.
You're doing great, Joe.
I appreciate it, brother. Folks, that's been great. The hour is done. And Mark Houck, you're a blessing to all of us, and thanks for coming on.
It's great to be
here. Appreciate it.